early in the night, and she replied softly,
"Yes, monsieur."
After an interval of silence, she went on,
"Sometimes, when I've finished work and if they let me, I have fun, too."
"How do you have fun?"
"However I can. They leave me alone. But I don't have many toys. Popine and Zelma don't like me playing with their dolls. All I have is a little lead sword. No bigger than that."
The little girl held up her little finger. "And it doesn't cut?"
"Yes, it does, monsieur," said the little girl. "It cuts lettuce, and the heads are flies."
They were coming to the village. Cosette guided the stranger through the streets. They passed the baker's, but Cosette forgot all about the bread she was supposed to bring back. The man had stopped asking her questions and now kept a mournful silence. When they had put the church behind them, the man, seeing all the shops out in the open under the stars, asked Cosette, "So the fair has come to town, has it?"
"No, monsieur, it's Christmas."
As they were getting near the inn, Cosette touched his arm, gingerly.
"Monsieur?"
"What, little one?"
"We are quite close to the house now."
"Well, then?"
"Would you let me have the bucket again now?"
"Why?"
"Because if Madame sees someone else carried it for me, she'll belt me."
The man gave her back the bucket. An instant later, they were at the door of the pothouse. Unpleasantness of putting up a pauper who might just be rich. Cosette could not stop herself from shooting a look at the great doll that was still on show in the fancy goods shop. Then she knocked on the door. The door opened. Mother Thénardier appeared, candle in hand.
"Ah, it's you, you little twerp. Lord knows you took your time. She's been dawdling again, having fun, the little hussy."
"Madame," said Cosette, all trembling, "here's a monsieur who would like a room."
Mother Thénardier swiftly replaced her scowl with an amiable grimace, a change of perspective peculiar to innkeepers, and avidly strained to get a look at the newcomer.
"You are the gentleman?"
she asked. "Yes, madame," replied the man, raising his hand to his hat. Rich travelers are not so polite. The gesture, plus inspection of the stranger's get-up and luggage, which Mother Thénardier passed in review at a glance, wiped the amiable grimace off her face and caused the scowl to reappear. She resumed dryly,
"In you come, my good man."
The good man entered. Mother Thénardier threw him a second glance, examined in particular his redding coat, which was absolutely worn out, and his hat, which was a bit knocked around, and consulted her husband, who was still drinking with the carters, with a nod and a wink and a shake of the head. The husband responded with that imperceptible wagging of the index finger that, backed by a pouting of the lips, signifies in such cases, broke. At that, Mother Thénardier cried,
"Ah, well, my dear man, I'm truly sorry, but I'm full up."
"You can put me wherever you like," said the man, "in the attic, in the stables. I'll pay the same price as a room."
40 sous?
40 sous it is.
Marvelous.
40 sous, a carter whispered to Mother Thénardier. "But it's only 20 sous.
It's 40 sous for the likes of him," replied Mother Thénardier in the same tone. "I don't put paupers up for any less."
"It's true," the husband added softly. "It lowers the tone of a place to have that lot hanging round."
But the man, after leaving his bundle and his stick on a seat, had sat down at a table where Cosette rushed to put a bottle of wine in a glass. The peddler who had asked for the bucket of water had gone to take it to his horse himself. Cosette had resumed her place under the kitchen table and her knitting. The man, who had hardly wet his lips with the wine he had poured himself, contemplated the little girl with a strange intensity. Cosette was ugly. If she had been happy, she might have been pretty. We have already sketched that sad little figure. Cosette was thin and pale. She was nearly 8 years old, but you would have put her age at 6. Her great big eyes, set deep in a sort of shadow, were almost lifeless because of all the crying they had done. The corners of her mouth had that curve of habitual anguish that you see in people on death row or in the terminally ill. Her hands were, as her mother had guessed, covered in chilblains.
The firelight that shone on her at that moment made her bones more prominent and her thinness alarmingly visible. As she was always shivering, she had gotten into the habit of pressing her knees together. All she had for clothes was an old rag that would have been pitiful in summer, but that was truly horrifying in winter. All she had on was a bit of cotton riddled with holes, not a scrap of wool. Here and there you could see her skin, and everywhere you could make out black and blue bruises showing where Mother Thénardier had thumped her. Her bare legs were red and rough. The hollow at her collarbone would have made you weep. The little girl's whole person, the way she moved, her demeanor, the sound of her voice, the gaps between one word and the next, her eyes, her silence, her slightest gesture, expressed and translated a single idea. Fear. Fear was written all over her. She was covered in it, so to speak. Fear drew her elbows back against her sides, pulled her heels back under her skirts, made her take up the smallest possible space, only let her breathe as much as strictly necessary, and had become what we might call her body's habit, without any possible variation, except to intensify. In the depths of her irises, there was a point of amazement where terror lurked. This fear was so strong that when she arrived, soaked to the bone as she was, Cosette had not dared to go and dry off by the fire and had silently resumed her work. The expression in the eyes of this 8-year-old child was normally so forlorn and sometimes so tragic that it seemed at certain moments that she was in the process of turning into an idiot or a demon. Never, as we said, had she known what it was to pray. Never had she set foot inside a church. "You think I've got the time?" Mother Thénardier would say. The man in the yellow riding coat did not take his eyes off Cosette.
"Ah, yes, where's the bread?"
Cosette, as was her custom every time Mother Thénardier raised her voice, sprang out very fast from under the table. She had completely forgotten about the bread. She resorted to the expedient of children who are always frightened. She lied.
"Madame, the baker was shut."
"You should have knocked."
"I did knock, madame."
"Well, then?"
"He didn't open."
"I'll find out tomorrow if that's true," said Mother Thénardier, "and if you're lying, I'll make you dance. Meanwhile, give me back the 15-sou piece.
Cosette plunged her hand into the pocket of her smock and went green. The 15-sou coin was not there anymore.
"Come on," said Mother Thénardier. "Didn't you hear me?"
Cosette turned her pocket inside out. There was nothing there. What could have happened to the money? The poor little girl could not get a word out. She was petrified.
"Did you lose it, the 15-sou coin? Growled Mother Thénardier. "Or are you trying to steal it from me?"
As she spoke, she reached up to grab the strap hanging from the mantelpiece. This dreaded movement gave Cosette the strength to shout,
"Have mercy, madame! Madame, I won't do it again!"
Mother Thénardier took down the strap. Meanwhile, the man in the yellow riding coat had been fumbling in the pocket of his waistcoat without anyone noticing. In any case, the other travelers were drinking or playing cards and paying no attention to anything else. Cosette curled up into a ball of anguish in the corner of the fireplace, trying to gather up and conceal her poor half-naked limbs from view. Mother Thénardier raised her arm.
"Excuse me, madame," said the man, "but a little while ago I saw something fall out of the little girl's pocket and roll away. It may be that."
As he spoke, he bent down and appeared to be searching on the ground for a moment.
"I was right. Here it is," he said, getting up. And he handed a silver coin to Mother Thénardier.
"Yes, that's it," she said.
That was not it, for it was a 20-sou coin, but Mother Thénardier had made a profit. She pocketed the coin and contented herself with throwing the child a ferocious look, saying,
"Don't let it happen again, ever!"
Cosette went back to what Mother Thénardier called her hole, and her great big eyes, fixed on the unknown traveler, began to take on an expression they had never had. It was still mainly naive amazement, but now tinged with a kind of stunned trust.
"While I think of it, do you want something to eat?" Mother Thénardier asked the traveler.
He did not reply. He seemed to be deep in thought.
"What kind of man is this fellow?" Mother Thénardier hissed. "Some frightful pauper. He doesn't have enough cash to eat. Is he only going to pay me for his room? Luckily, he didn't get it into his head to pinch the money that was on the ground, but...
Meanwhile, a door opened, and in walked Eponine and Azelma. They really were two pretty little girls, more bourgeois than peasants, incredibly charming, one with very shiny auburn plaits, the other with long black plaits that fell down her back, both so lively, clean, plump, fresh, and healthy that it was a pleasure to lay eyes on them. They were warmly bundled up, but with such maternal art that the layers of material did not detract in any way from the stylishness of the arrangement. Winter was catered for without erasing spring. The two little girls streamed light. What is more, they reigned supreme. In their outfits, in their gaiety, in the racket they made, there was supreme power. When they entered, Mother Thénardier said to them, in a scolding voice that was full of adoration,
"Ah, so there you are, you two."
She pulled them up onto her knees, one after the other, smoothed their hair, retied their ribbons, and then, releasing them again, and with that gentle sort of shake peculiar to mothers, she cried,
"Aren't they a sight for sore eyes?"
They went and sat by the fire. They had a doll they were turning over and back, on their knees, chirping away happily. From time to time, Cosette lifted her eyes from her knitting and sadly watched them playing. Eponine and Azelma did not look at Cosette. For them she was like the dog. These three little girls could not chalk up 24 years between them, and yet they already represented all of adult society. On the one side, envy, on the other, scorn. The Thénardier sister's doll was very washed out and very old and badly battered. But it did not look any less wonderful to Cosette, who had never had a doll in her life, a real doll, to use an expression any child will understand. Suddenly, Mother Thénardier, who was constantly moving back and forth about the room, noticed that Cosette was distracted and that instead of working, she was busy watching the little girls play.
"Aha, I've caught you," she cried. "That's your idea of work, is it? I'll make you work with the strap."
The stranger, without getting up from his chair, turned toward Mother Thénardier. "Madame," he said, smiling with an almost frightened look.
"Bah! Let her play."
On the part of any traveller who had eaten a slice of lamb and drunk 2 bottles of wine at supper, and who did not look like a frightful pauper, such a wish would have been a command. But for a man with a hat like that, to allow himself to have a desire, and for a man with a redding coat like that, to allow himself to have a wish, that was something Mother Thénardier did not feel she should put up with. She retorted sharply,
"She has to work since she eats. I don't feed her for her to do nothing."
"So, what is she making?" asked the stranger in that sweet voice that contrasted so strangely with his beggar's clothes and his porter's shoulders. Mother Thénardier deigned to reply,
"Stockings, if it's all the same to you. Stockings for my little girls who don't have any, none to speak of, and will soon be getting around barefoot."
The man looked at Cosette's poor red feet and continued, "When will she be through with this pair of stockings?"
"She's got a good 3 or 4 full days ahead of her, the lazy thing."
"And how much might this pair of stockings be worth when they're done?" Mother Thénardier threw him a scornful look.
"At least 30 sous.
"Would you take 5 francs for them?" the man went on.
"Christ!" guffawed a carter who was listening. "5 francs! You bet she'll take 'em. 5 big ones.
Old man Thénardier decided it was time to take matters in hand.
"Yes, monsieur, if they take your fancy, we could give you these stockings for 5 francs. We never refuse travellers anything."
"You'd have to pay right away,"
said Mother Thénardier in her usual short, peremptory manner.
"I will buy this pair of stockings," replied the man. "And," he added, taking a 5-franc coin out of his pocket and laying it on the table, "I will pay for them."
Then he turned to Cosette.
"Now your work is mine. Go and play, my child."
The carter was so moved by the 5-franc coin that he left his glass where it was and came running over.
"Damn if it isn't real," he said, examining it. "A real rear wheel, not a fake."
Old man Thénardier went over and quietly slipped the coin in his waistcoat pocket. Mother Thénardier had no comeback.
She bit her lips, and her face took on an expression of hate.
Yet Cosette was trembling. She took the risk of asking, "Madame, is it true? Can I go and play?"
"Play," said Mother Thénardier in a terrible voice.
"Thank you, madame," said Cosette.
And while her mouth thanked Mother Thénardier, her whole little heart thanked the traveler. Old man Thénardier went back to his drinking. His wife said in his ear, "What the hell can this yellow man be?" "I have seen," replied old man Thénardier in a haughty tone, "millionaires getting around in red coats like that." Cosette had left her knitting, but she had not left her place. Cosette always moved as little as possible. She had taken out of a box behind her a few old rags and her little lead sword. Éponine and Azelma paid no attention whatsoever to what was happening. They had just performed a most important operation. They had grabbed hold of the cat. They had thrown the doll on the ground, and Éponine, who was the elder, was wrapping the little cat up, despite its meowings and contortions, in a whole pile of old red and blue rags. While she was performing this grave and difficult work, she said to her sister, in that sweet and adorable language of children whose gracefulness, like the splendor of a butterfly's wings, eludes us when we try to pin it down,
"See, sister, this doll is more fun than the other one. It moves, it cries, it's nice and warm. See, sister, let's play with it. It'll be my little girl. I'll be a lady, I'll come to see you, and you'll look at it. Little by little, you'll see its whiskers, and you'll get a shock. And then you'll see its ears, and then you'll see its tail, and you'll get a shock, and you'll say to me, 'Oh, my God!' And I'll say to you, 'Yes, madame, that's my little girl, and she's like that. Little girls are like that these days.'"
Azelma listened to Éponine in wonder. Meanwhile, the drinkers had started singing an obscene ditty, and they were laughing so hard they shook the ceiling. Old man Thénardier egged them on and joined in. Just as birds will make a nest out of anything, children can make a doll out of anything at all. While Éponine and Azelma were dressing up the cat, Cosette, for her part, had dressed up the sword. This done, she had laid it down in her arms and was softly singing to put it to sleep. The doll is one of the most imperious needs and, at the same time, one of the most charming instincts little girls have. To look after, clothe, adorn, dress and undress, dress all over again, to teach, to scold a bit, to rock, cuddle, put to sleep, to imagine that some object is someone, this is the whole future of the woman in a nutshell. While dreaming and while chattering away, while putting together little trousseaux and little layettes, while sewing little frocks, little bodices and little tops, the little girl becomes a young girl. The young girl becomes a big girl. The big girl becomes a woman. The first baby takes over from the last doll. A little girl without a doll is more or less as miserable and just as impossible as a woman without a child. So Cosette had made a doll of the sword. Mother Thénardier, for her part, had gone over to the yellow man. "My husband's right," she thought. "Maybe it's Monsieur Lafitte in person. Some rich geezers are quite crazy." She came and leaned on his table. "Monsieur," she said. At the word monsieur, the man turned around. Mother Thénardier had only called him dear fellow or good man till that moment.
"You see, monsieur," she said, putting on her sweetest look, which was even more annoying to look at than her ferocious look, "I don't mind the child playing. I'm not against it. But just this once, because you're generous. You see, it comes from nothing. It has to work."
"The child is not yours, then?" asked the man.
"Good God, no, monsieur. It's a poor little thing that we took in just like that out of charity. A kind of idiot child, a moron. She must have water on the brain. You see what a great big head she's got? We do what we can for her. We're not rich, after all. We've been writing to her people for nothing. It's been 6 months since anyone's answered. You'd have to think her mother's dropped dead."
"Ah," said the man, and he fell back into his reverie.
"The mother was no good," added Mother Thénardier. "She abandoned her kid."
During this conversation, Cosette, as though some instinct alerted her that they were talking about her, had not taken her eyes off Mother Thénardier. She was vaguely listening. She picked up a few words here and there. Meanwhile, the drinkers, all three quarters sozzled, were singing their dirty song again, jollier than ever. It was an off-color story in very bad taste, in which the Holy Virgin and the infant Jesus both featured. Mother Thénardier had wandered off to join in the outbursts of hilarity. Cosette, under the table, was watching the fire which was reflected in her staring eyes. She had again begun to rock the sort of swaddled doll she had made, and while she rocked it, she sang, in a low voice, "My mother is dead. My mother is dead. My mother is dead." At the renewed insistence of the hostess, the yellow man, the millionaire, finally consented to have supper.
"What would monsieur like?"
"Bread and cheese," said the man.
"No doubt about it. He's a beggar," thought Mother Thénardier.
The drunks were still singing their song, and the child under the table also sang hers. All of a sudden, Cosette broke off. She had just turned round and seen the little Thénardier's doll, which they had abandoned for the cat and left lying on the floor a few feet from the kitchen table. She dropped the swaddled sword, which only half satisfied her, and ran her eyes slowly around the room. Mother Thénardier was whispering to her husband and counting the money. Ponine and Zelma were playing with the cat. The travelers were eating or drinking or singing. No one was looking at her. She did not have a moment to lose. She crawled out from under the table on her hands and knees, made sure once more that no one was spying on her, then swiftly slid over to the doll and grabbed it. A second later, she was back in her spot, sitting down, not moving, just turned in such a way as to cast a shadow over the doll, which she held in her arms. The happiness of playing with a doll was so rare for her that it had all the violence of rapture. No one had seen her except the traveler, who was slowly eating his meager supper. This joy lasted almost a quarter of an hour. But no matter how careful she had been, Cosette did not realize that one of the doll's feet were sticking out and that the fire in the grate was shining very brightly on it. This luminous pink foot emerging from the shadows suddenly struck Azelma, who said to Eponine,
"Look, sister."
The two little girls stopped what they were doing, stunned. Cosette had dared take the doll. Eponine got up and, without letting go of the cat, went to her mother and began to tug at her skirt.
"Leave me alone," said the mother. "What do you want?"
"Mother," said the child, "just look."
And she pointed a finger at Cosette. Cosette, completely wrapped in the ecstasy of possession, saw and heard nothing anymore. Mother Thénardier's face took on that special expression that is composed of the terrible and the trivial combined, and that is why such women are called shrews. This time, wounded pride aggravated her anger even further. Cosette had crossed all the boundaries. Cosette had violated the doll of the young ladies. A Tsarina who had seen a moujik trying on her imperial son's big blue sash would have exactly the same expression on her face. She yelled in a voice made hoarse by outrage,
"Cosette!"
Cosette jumped up as though there had been an earthquake underneath her. She turned around.
"Cosette!"
Mother Thénardier yelled again. Cosette took the doll and laid it gently on the ground in a sort of veneration mixed with despair. Then, without taking her eyes off it, she joined her hands together and it is frightening to say this of a child of her age, wrung them. Then, something that none of the emotions of the day had forced from her, neither the expedition to the woods, nor the awful weight of the bucket of water, nor losing the money, nor the sight of the strap, nor even the dark words she had heard Mother Thénardier mutter, she burst into tears. She sobbed. Meanwhile, the traveler had gotten to his feet. "What's the matter?" he asked Mother Thénardier.
"Can't you see?"
said Mother Thénardier, pointing to the corpus delicti lying at Cosette's feet. "Well, what of it?" the man went on.
"That little bitch," answered Mother Thénardier, "has dared touch the girl's doll."
"All this carrying on for that?" said the man. "So what if she did play with the doll?"
"She's touched it with her filthy hands,"
pursued Mother Thénardier, with her hideous hands. At this point, Cosette sobbed even harder.
Will you shut up? Screamed Mother Thénardier.
The man went straight to the door to the street, opened it, and went out. The moment he had gone, Mother Thénardier took advantage of his absence to swiftly give Cosette a nasty kick under the table, which caused the little girl to howl. The door opened again. The man reappeared. He was carrying, in both hands, the fabulous doll we mentioned, and that the village kids had been ogling since morning, and he stood it before Cosette, saying, "Here, this is for you." It seems that all the time he had been there, over an hour, lost in his thoughts, he had vaguely been aware of the fancy goods shop lit up with little lanterns and candles so splendidly that you could see it through the tavern windows like an illumination. Cosette looked up. She watched the man coming toward her with the doll the same way she'd have watched the sun approaching. She heard those unheard-of words, "This is for you." She looked at him, she looked at the doll. Then she slowly backed away and went and hid right at the back of the table next to the wall. She no longer cried, she no longer howled. She looked like she no longer dared breathe. Mother Thénardier, Éponine, Azelma were all so many statues. Even the drinkers stopped drinking. A solemn silence had fallen over the entire tavern. Mother Thénardier, petrified and dumb, started in on her conjectures again.
"What the hell is this old codger? Is he a pauper? Is he a millionaire? Maybe he's both, meaning a thief."
The face of Thénardier, the husband, offered that expressive line that accentuates the humanness of the human face every time the dominant instinct shows up in it in all its bestial power. The man who ran that sleazy dive studied the doll and the traveler in turn. He seemed to smell the man as he would smell a sack of money. It was all over in a flash. He went over to his wife and whispered to her, "That thing costs at least 30 francs. Don't do anything stupid. Start groveling." Vulgar natures have one thing in common with guileless natures, and that is that there is never any transition.
"Well, Cosette,"
Mother Thénardier crooned in a voice that was dripping with the bitter honey of the spiteful woman,
"aren't you going to take your doll?"
Cosette took the risk of coming out of her hole.
"My little Cosette," Mother Thénardier went on in syrupy tones, "monsieur is giving you a doll. Take it. It's yours."
Cosette stared at the wonderful doll in a sort of terror. Her face was still flooded with tears, but her eyes began to fill up, like the sky at the break of day, with strange rays of joy. What she felt at that moment was something like what she would have felt if someone had suddenly said to her, "Little girl, you are the Queen of France." It seemed to her that if she touched the doll, thunder would roll out of it, which was true to some extent, for she told herself that Mother Thénardier would roar at her and belt her. Yet the attraction won out. She ended up coming closer and timidly murmured as she turned toward Mother Thénardier,
"Can I, madame?"
No words could describe the look on her face, which was at once desperate, horror-stricken, and thrilled.
"For God's sake," said Mother Thénardier, "it's yours, since monsieur is giving it to you." "True, monsieur?" Cosette went on. "Is it true? It's mine, the lady?"
The stranger looked as though his eyes were full of tears. He seemed to have reached that emotional state where you can't speak for fear of breaking down. He nodded to Cosette and placed the hand of the lady in her little hand. Cosette pulled her hand back as though the hand of the lady had burned it, and began to study the floor. We are compelled to add that at that moment she stuck her tongue out in a fairly extravagant manner. All of a sudden she wheeled round and furiously grabbed the doll.
"I'll call her Catherine," she said.
It was a truly bizarre moment. The moment Cosette's rags pressed against and embraced the ribbons and fresh pink muslins of the doll.
Madame, she went on, can I put her on a chair?
Yes, my child, said Mother Thénardier.
Now it was Éponine and Azelma who watched Cosette with envy. Cosette put Catherine on a chair, then sat on the floor in front of her, and stayed there without moving, without saying a word, in an attitude of contemplation.
Go ahead and play, then, Cosette, said the stranger.
Oh, I am playing, replied the little girl.
This stranger, this unknown quantity, who seemed like a visitation from Providence to Cosette, was at that moment what Mother Thénardier hated most in the world. But she had to restrain herself. It was more emotion than she could bear, even accustomed as she was to dissimulation in her effort to copy her husband in all things. She rushed to send her daughters to bed, then asked the yellow man for his permission to send Cosette to bed too. She's had such a big day today, she added on a maternal note. Cosette went off to bed, carrying Catherine in her arms. Mother Thénardier went every so often to the other end of the room, where her man was, to soothe her soul, as she put it. She exchanged with her husband a few words, all the more furious for her not daring to utter them out loud.
Stupid old goat! What's got into him, turning up here and upsetting us like this? Wanting that little monster to play, giving her dolls, giving dolls worth 40 francs to that little mongrel that I'd give away for 40 sous myself. Any more of that, and he'll be calling her Your Majesty, like she was the Duchesse du Berry. He must be off his rocker. You reckon he's got rabies, our old mystery man?
Why, it's pretty straightforward, old man Thénardier shot back, if it makes him happy. You're happy if the little one's working. Him, he's happy if she's playing. He's within his rights. A traveller can do what he likes if he's paying. If the old boy's a philanthropist, what's it to you? If he's a half-wit, it's none of your business. What are you interfering for as long as he's got the money?
Spoken like the king of the castle and reasoned like an innkeeper. In neither case was there any right of reply. The man was leaning on the table and had resumed his dreamy attitude. All the other travellers, peddlers and carters, had moved off a bit and stopped singing. They observed him at a distance with a sort of respectful fear. This ordinary character, so poorly dressed, who pulled 5-franc pieces, rear wheels, out of his pocket with such ease, and who lavished gigantic dolls on little trollops in wooden clogs, was certainly a magnificent and awesome fellow. Several hours passed. Midnight mass had been said. Christmas Eve was over, the drinkers had gone, the bar had closed, the low room was deserted, the fire had gone out. The stranger was still in the same place and in the same position. From time to time, he shifted his weight from one elbow to the other. That was all. But he had not said a word since Cosette had left. Only the Thénardiers, out of propriety and curiosity, remained in the room.
"Is he going to spend the night like that?" grumbled Mother Thénardier.
When the clock struck 2 in the morning, she declared herself defeated and said to her husband, "I'm going to bed. You do what you like." The husband sat down at a table in a corner, lit a candle, and began to read the Courrier Français. A good hour passed in this way. The worthy innkeeper had read the Courrier Français at least 3 times, from the date of the edition to the name of the printer. The stranger did not budge. Thénardier shifted in his seat, coughed, spat, blew his nose, made his chair creak. The man didn't move a muscle.
Is he asleep?
Thénardier wondered. The man was not asleep, but nothing could rouse him. Finally, Thénardier took off his cap, quietly went over, and ventured to say,
"Won't monsieur get some rest?"
Bed down would have seemed excessive and too familiar to him. Get some rest smacked of luxury and was nice and respectful. Words like those have the mysterious and marvelous property of inflating the sum on the bill to be paid the following morning. A room where you bed down costs 20 sous. A room where you get some rest costs 20 francs.
Oh, yes, said the stranger. You're right. Where is your stable?
Monsieur, said Thénardier with a smile, I will take monsieur there.
He took the candle, the man took his bundle and his stick, and Thénardier led him to a room on the first floor, which was of a rare splendor, all furnished in mahogany, with a sleigh bed and curtains of red calico.
What is this? Said the traveler.
It's our own bridal chamber, said the innkeeper. We live in another room, the wife and I. We only come in here 3 or 4 times a year.
I'd have been just as happy with the stable, said the man bluntly.
Thénardier acted as though he had not heard this rather unkind remark. He lit 2 brand-new beeswax candles that were on display on the mantelpiece. A reasonable fire was blazing away in the hearth. On the mantelpiece, under a glass jar, sat a woman's headdress worked with silver thread and orange blossom.
And this? What is this? The stranger continued.
Monsieur, said Thénardier, that's my wife's bridal hat.
The traveler gave the object a look that seemed to say, So there was once a time when that monster was a virgin. As it happened, Thénardier was lying. When he took on the lease of this shack to turn it into a pothouse, he had found the room done out like this, and had bought the furniture, and picked the orange blossom up at the junk dealer's, judging that it would put the wife in a gracious light, and that the result for his house would be what the English call respectability. When the traveler turned round, the host had vanished. Thénardier had discreetly snuck off without daring to say good night, not wanting to show excessive cordiality to a man he was planning to fleece royally the following morning. The innkeeper retired to his room. His wife was in bed, but she was not asleep. When she heard her husband's step, she turned over and said,
You know, I'm kicking Cosette out the door tomorrow.
Thénardier replied coldly,
That's what you think.
They did not exchange another word, and some minutes later, their candle went out. For his part, the traveler had put his bundle and stick in a corner. With the host gone, he sat in an armchair and stayed there thinking for a while. Then he took his shoes off, took one of the 2 candles, blew out the other one, pushed the door open, and left the room, looking all around him as though he were searching for something. He went down a hallway and reached the stairs. There he heard a very faint little sound that was like a child breathing. He followed the sound and came to a sort of triangular nook built under the staircase, or rather formed by the staircase itself. The nook was quite simply the space beneath the stairs. Here, among all kinds of old baskets and old bits of broken glass and crockery, in the dust and the cobwebs, there was a bed. If you can call a bed a straw mattress so riddled with holes, you can see the straw beneath, and a blanket so riddled with holes, you can see the straw mattress beneath. No sheets. The mattress was lying right on the tiles on the floor. In this bed, Cosette slept. The man went up to her and looked at her. Cosette was sleeping soundly. She was fully clothed. In winter, she did not take her clothes off at all because of the cold. She held the doll tightly to her. Its big open eyes shone in the dark. From time to time she let out a huge sigh, as if she were about to wake up, and she squeezed the doll in her arms almost convulsively. Only one of her wooden clogs was lying next to the bed. An open door near Cosette's cubbyhole allowed a glimpse of a fairly big, dark room. The stranger went in. At the back, through a glass door, you could see 2 tiny, very white twin beds. These were the beds of Azelma and Eponine. Behind the beds, a curtainless wicker cradle was half hidden, where the little boy who had screamed all night was sleeping. The stranger surmised that this room communicated with that of the Thénardier couple. He was about to withdraw when his gaze fell on the fireplace, one of those vast tavern fireplaces that always have such a minuscule fire when there is a fire, and that are so chilling to see. In this one there was no fire, there were no ashes even. but what there was attracted the traveller's attention. There were two little child's shoes, in stylish shapes and different sizes. The traveller remembered the sweet and immemorial custom of children putting their shoes in the fireplace on Christmas Eve to wait there in the dark, in the hopes that some sparkling present would be put in them by their good fairy. Eponine and Azelma had made sure they did not forget to do so, and had each put one of their shoes in the fireplace. The traveller crouched down. The fairy, that is, the mother, had already paid her visit, and gleaming in each shoe was a beautiful brand-new 10-sou piece. The man stood up and was about to walk away when he spotted another object, at the back to one side, in the darkest corner of the hearth. He peered and recognized a clog, a hideous clog made out of the roughest wood, half broken and all covered in ash and caked on mud. It was Cosette's clog. Cosette, with that touching, childish trust that can be endlessly betrayed without ever being discouraged, had also placed her clog in the fireplace. Hope in a child who has never known anything but despair is a sweet and sublime thing. There was nothing in this wooden shoe. The stranger felt in his waistcoat, bent down, and placed a gold louis in Cosette's clog. Then he padded back to his room, as silently as a wolf. Thénardier in operation. Next morning, 2 hours at least before daybreak, Thénardier, the husband, was sitting by a candle at a table in the low room of the tavern, pen in hand, composing the bill for the traveller in the yellow redingcoat. The wife was on her feet, half bent over him, following him with her eyes. They did not exchange a word. On one side it was all profound meditation. On the other, that religious admiration with which you watch some wonder of the human mind spring forth and blossom. A noise could be heard in the house. It was the lark sweeping the stairs. After a good quarter of an hour and a few mistakes scratched out, Thénardier produced this chef-d'oeuvre. Bill of the Monsieur in number 1. Supper, 3 francs. Room, 10 francs. Candle, 5 francs. Fire, 4 francs. Service, 1 franc. Total, 23 francs. Service was written S-E-R-V-I-S-S-E. 23 francs! Cried Mother Thénardier with enthusiasm marred by some hesitation. Like all great artists, Thénardier was not satisfied. Pah! He said. It was the tone of Castlereagh at the Congress of Vienna drawing up the bill France would have to pay. Monsieur Thénardier, you are right, he definitely owes that, murmured the wife, who was thinking of the doll given to Cosette in front of her girls. It's only right, but it's too much. He won't pay. Old man Thénardier gave out his chilling laugh and said, he'll pay. This laugh was the ultimate expression of certainty and authority. What was said thus had to be. The wife did not try to press the subject. She started to tidy the tables. The husband paced up and down the room. A moment later he added, I owe at least 1,500 francs myself. He went and sat in the corner of the fireplace, meditating, his feet on the hot ashes. As for that, the wife went on, aren't you forgetting? I'm chucking Cosette out today. That monster, it tears my heart out to see her with that doll. I'd rather marry Louis XVIII than keep her in the house another day. Old man Thénardier lit his pipe and answered between two puffs, you'll give the man the bill. Then he went out. Scarcely had he quit the room than the traveller came in. Thénardier spun round at once and stayed motionless at the half-open door, visible only to his wife. The yellow man was carrying his bundle and his stick in his hand. Up so early, said Mother Thénardier. Is Monsieur leaving us so soon? As she spoke, she turned the bill round in her hands with an embarrassed look and folded it over, creasing it with her nails. Her hard face had shifted subtly to an expression of timidity and punctiliousness that was not normal for her. To present such a bill to a man who looked every inch the bum did not come easy to her. The traveller seemed worried and distracted. He answered,
"Yes, madame, I'm off."
"Monsieur," she went on, "did not have business in Montfermeil, then?"
"No, I am just passing through. That's all." "So, madame," he added, "what do I owe?"
Mother Thénardier handed him the folded bill without answering. The man unfolded the piece of paper, looked at it, but his mind was clearly elsewhere.
"Madame," he said, "do you do a brisk trade in this Montfermeil?"
So, monsieur," replied Mother Thénardier, stunned at not seeing any explosion. She followed this up in an elegiac and lamenting tone. "Oh, monsieur, times are certainly hard, and then we don't get many well-heeled types out here. It's all small fry, no hopers, if you know what I mean. If only we got travellers as rich and generous as monsieur now and then. We've got so many outlays. Listen, the little thing eats us out of house and home."
"What little thing?"
"The little girl, of course, you know. Cosette, the lark, as we say around here."
"Ah," said the man.
She continued, "They're a silly lot, they are, these peasants, with their nicknames. She looks more like a bat than a lark. You see, monsieur, we don't ask for charity, but we can't give it either. We earn nothing, and we have to fork out a fortune. There's the license, the taxes, doors and windows, duties. As monsieur knows, the government demands an awful lot of money, and then I've got my own girls, haven't I? I don't need to feed someone else's brat."
The man replied, in a voice he was forcing himself to make indifferent, but in which there was a quiver, "What if she was taken off your hands?"
"Who? Cosette?"
"Yes." The woman's violent red face lit up with a hideous flush.
"Ah, monsieur, my good monsieur, take her, keep her, take her away, cart her off, sprinkle her with sugar, stuff her with truffles. Drink her, eat her, and may the Holy Blessed Virgin and all the saints in heaven bless you."
"Agreed."
"True? You'll take her away?"
"I'll take her away."
"Right now?"
"Right now. Call the child."
"Cosette!"
yelled Mother Thénardier. "Meanwhile," the man went on, "I still haven't paid what I owe. How much is it?"
He cast a glance at the bill and could not repress a start of surprise.
23 francs.
He looked at the innkeeper's wife and repeated, 23 francs? There had been in the utterance of that repeated sentence the tone that distinguishes the question mark from the exclamation mark. Mother Thénardier had time to prepare herself for the shock. She answered with assurance,
"Heavens, yes, monsieur, it's 23 francs.
The stranger placed 5 5-franc coins on the table.
"Go and get the little girl," he said.
At that moment, old man Thénardier strode into the middle of the room and said, "Monsieur owes 26 sous.
26 sous, cried the wife.
20 sous for the room, resumed Thénardier coldly, "and 6 sous for supper. As for the little girl, I need to talk that over a bit with monsieur. Leave us, missus." Mother Thénardier had one of those radiant flushes that unexpected flashes of talent will spur in a person. She felt that the great actor was entering the stage, and, wordlessly, made herself scarce. As soon as they were alone, old man Thénardier offered the traveller a chair. The traveller sat down. Thénardier remained standing, and his face took on a peculiar expression of bonhomie and simplicity.
"Monsieur," he said, "listen, I'll tell you something. And that something is that I adore her myself, that child."
The stranger stared at him. "What child?"
Thénardier continued, "It's funny you get so attached. What's all that money for? Take your 100 sous coins back. I adore that child."
"Which one?" the stranger demanded.
"Our little Cosette, of course. Aren't you wanting to take her from us? Well, then I'm telling you frankly, true as it is that you're an honest man, I can't allow it. She'd be breaking her promise to me, that little girl would. I first set eyes on it when it was just a tiny mite. It's true that she costs us money. It's true that she has her faults. It's true that we aren't rich. It's true that I forked out over 400 francs in medicine in one go once when she was sick. But a person's got to do something for the good Lord. It doesn't have a mother or a father. I brought her up. My bread is her bread. In fact, I'm truly attached to her, that child. You understand, you get to feel real affection.
I'm a bit of a sucker myself. I don't think about it. I love the little girl. My wife's sharp, but she loves her, too. You see, she's like our child. I need to have it jabbering away about the place.
The stranger went on staring at him. He continued.
Pardon, sorry, monsieur, but you don't give your child to some passerby just like that, eh? I'm not wrong, am I? Although I can't say you're rich. You seem like a good sort of fellow. What if it would make her happy? But we'd have to be sure about that, you get me? Suppose I do let her go and sacrifice myself. I'd like to know where she's going. I wouldn't want to lose sight of her. I'd want to know who she's living with, so I could go and see her now and then, and for her to know that her good old foster father is there, that he's watching over her. In the end, some things just can't be done. I don't even know your name. If you took her off, I'd be saying, well, then, what about the lark? Where can she be? I'd have to see some miserable scrap of paper, at least a tiny speck of a passport. Something.
The stranger, without ceasing to look at him with that look that goes straight to the bottom of the conscience, so to speak, answered him in a grave and firm tone. Monsieur Thénardier, you don't need a passport to go 5 leagues from Paris. If I take Cosette, I will take her, and that's that. You will not know my name, you will not know where I live, you will not know where she is. And my intention is that she never sees you again in her life. I break the rope she has tied around her foot, and she flies away, free. Does that suit you, yes or no? Just as demons and spirits recognize by certain signs the presence of a superior god, Thénardier understood that he was dealing with someone very strong. It was like an intuition. He understood this with his clear and sagacious swiftness. The night before, while drinking with the carters and smoking and singing dirty ditties, he had spent the evening observing the stranger, watching him like a cat, studying him like a mathematician. He had at once both spied on him on his own account, for pleasure and out of instinct, and spied on him as though he were being paid to do so. Not a gesture, not a move that the man with the yellow coat made had escaped him. Even before the stranger had so obviously shown interest in Cosette, Thénardier had seen it coming. He had intercepted the old man's searching glances, which constantly returned to the child. Why the interest? What kind of man was he? Why, with so much money in his purse, the miserable get-up? Questions that he asked himself without being able to resolve them, and that annoyed him. He had dwelt on them all night. The man couldn't be Cosette's father. Was he a grandfather? Then why not make himself known right away? When you're within your rights, you show your hand. This man, obviously, had no rights over Cosette. So what was he? Old man Thénardier was lost in suppositions. He glimpsed everything and saw nothing. Whatever was going on, when he began this conversation with the man, sure that there was some secret at the bottom of it all, sure that the man was keen to stay in the shadows, he felt himself to be in a strong position. At the stranger's clear and firm response, when he saw that this mysterious personage was so simply mysterious, he felt weak. He had not expected anything of the kind. All his conjectures were put to rout. He rallied his ideas. He weighed the whole thing up in a second. Old man Thénardier was one of those men who judge a situation at a glance. He gauged that this was the moment to get straight to the point. He behaved like the great captains at the decisive moment that they alone knew how to recognize. He promptly unmasked his guns. "Monsieur," he said, "I must have 1,500 francs. The stranger took an old black leather wallet out of a side pocket, opened it, and took out 3 banknotes, which he placed on the table. Then he pressed his huge thumb down on the notes and said to the owner of the flophouse, "Get Cosette." While this was happening, what was Cosette doing? As soon as she had woken up, Cosette had run to her wooden clog. She found the gold coin there. It was not a Napoleon. It was one of those spanking new 20-franc pieces from the Restoration, on the face of which the little Prussian pigtail had replaced the crown of laurel. Cosette was dazed. Her fate was beginning to intoxicate her.
She did not know what a gold coin was. She had never seen one. She wasted no time in hiding it in her pocket as though she had stolen it. Yet she felt that it really was hers. She guessed where the gift had come from. But the joy she felt was mixed with fear. She was happy, but more than anything else, she was stupefied. These things, so magnificent and so lovely, did not seem real to her. The doll frightened her, the gold coin frightened her. She vaguely shook before such splendors, only the stranger did not frighten her. On the contrary, he reassured her. Since the night before, in her amazement, in her sleep, she had thought in her little child's head about this man who looked old and poor and so sad, and who was so rich and so good. Ever since she had met the man in the woods, everything seemed to have changed for her. Less happy than the merest swallow in the sky, Cosette had never known what it was to take refuge in her mother's shadow, under her mother's wing. For 5 years, that is, for as long as she could remember, the poor child had been shivering and freezing. She had always been completely naked beneath the bitter kiss of misfortune. Now it seemed to her that she was fully clothed. Before, her soul had been cold, now it was warm. She no longer felt so terrified of Mother Thénardier. She was no longer alone. Someone was there. She had very quickly got down to her usual morning job. The louis, which she had on her in the same apron pocket the 15-sou coin had fallen out of the night before, kept distracting her. She did not dare touch it, but she spent 5 minutes at a time contemplating it, with her tongue hanging out, we must confess. As she swept the stairs, she stopped dead, forgetting her broom and the entire universe as she looked at this star shining at the bottom of her pocket. It was in one of these dreamy moments of contemplation that Mother Thénardier caught up with her. On her husband's orders, she had gone in search of her. It was unheard of, but for once, she did not give her a slap or let fly some insult.
"Cosette," she said almost sweetly, "come quick."
An instant later, Cosette stepped into the low room. The stranger took the bundle he had brought and untied it. This bundle contained a little woolen dress, a smock, a fustian vest, a petticoat, a fichu, woolen stockings, and proper shoes. A complete outfit for an 8-year-old girl. All of it was black. "My child," said the man, "take this and go and get dressed quickly." Day was dawning when those inhabitants of Montfermeil who were starting to open their doors saw walking by on the road to Paris a shabbily dressed man, hand in hand, with a little girl all in mourning and carrying a big pink doll in her arms. They were heading for Livry. It was our man and Cosette. No one knew who the man was, and as Cosette was no longer in rags, many did not recognize her either. Cosette was going away. Who with? She had no idea. Where? She did not know. All she understood was that she was leaving the Thénardier flop house behind. No one had thought to say goodbye to her, nor had she thought to say goodbye to anyone. She was getting away from this hated and hateful house. Poor sweet little creature, whose heart had till that moment only ever been crushed. Cosette walked gravely, opening wide her huge eyes and studying the sky. She had put her louis in the pocket of her new smock. From time to time, she bent over and took a peek at it. Then she looked at the man. She felt a bit like she was walking along next to God. Who looks for the best may find the worst. Mother Thénardier, as was her wont, had left her husband to it. She was expecting big things. When the man and Cosette had gone, old man Thénardier let a good quarter of an hour pass, and then he took her aside and showed her the 1,500 francs.
"Is that all?" she said.
It was the first time since they were married that she had dared criticize an act of the master. He reeled from the blow.
"Actually, you're right," he said. "I'm an idiot. Give me my hat."
He folded the 3 banknotes, shoved them in his pocket,
and went out as fast as he could go, but he went the wrong way at first, off to the right. Some neighbors he questioned soon set him straight. The Lark and the man had been seen heading in the direction of Livry. He followed the sign, taking great strides and muttering to himself, "That man's obviously a millionaire dressed up in yellow, and I'm a damned idiot. First he hands over 20 sous, then 5 francs, then 50 francs, then 1,500 francs, just as easily every time. He'd have handed over 15,000 francs, but I'll catch up with him." Then there was the bundle of clothes already put together in advance for the little girl. That was very strange. There had to be any amount of mystery behind that. You don't let go of a mystery once you've got hold of one. The secrets of the rich are sponges full of gold. You have to know how to squeeze them. All these thoughts swirled around in his brain. "I'm a damned idiot," he said. When you leave Montfermeil and reach the bend in the road to Livry, you can see the road lying ahead of you along the plateau for a very long way. Having reached that point, he reckoned he should be able to spot the man and the little girl. He looked ahead as far as the eye could see and saw nothing. He made further inquiries, but he was losing time. Passers-by told him the man and the child he was looking for were heading off toward the woods near Gagny. He sped off in that direction. They had the jump on him, but a child can only go slowly, and he was going fast. And then again, he knew the countryside backward. All of a sudden, he stopped and smacked his forehead, the way a man will when he has forgotten something fundamental and is ready to retrace his steps. "I should have brought my gun," he said to himself. Thénardier was one of those split personalities who sometimes pass among us without our knowledge, and who disappear without our knowing them because fate has shown us only one side of them. The fate of many a man is to live half-submerged in this way. In a quiet, humdrum situation, Thénardier had all it takes to play, we do not say to be, what passes for an honest tradesman, a decent burgher. At the same time, given certain circumstances, given the occurrence of certain jolts stirring up the underside of his nature, he had all it takes to be a real bastard. He was a shopkeeper with a monster inside him. Satan must at times have crouched in some corner of that hole in which Thénardier lived and marveled at his hideous masterpiece. After a moment's hesitation, "Bah," he thought, "they've got time to get away." But he continued on his way, hurtling ahead, almost as though he knew exactly where he was going, with the cunning of a fox scenting a flock of partridges. Indeed, when he had passed the ponds and cut diagonally across the big clearing that lies to the right of the Avenue de Belleville, just as he reached the grassy path that practically circles the hill and covers the arch of the old aqueduct of the Abbey of Chelles, he spotted above a bush a hat on which he had already built so many conjectures. It was the man's hat. The bush was low. Thénardier could make out the man and Cosette just sitting there. You couldn't see the child because she was so small, but you could see the doll's head. Old man Thénardier was not mistaken. The man had sat down there to let Cosette have a little rest. The innkeeper rounded the scrub and appeared to pop out of nowhere in the eyes of the people he was looking for.
"Pardon me. Sorry, monsieur," he said, completely winded, "but here's your 1,500 francs back."
As he spoke those words, he held out the 3 banknotes to the stranger. The man raised his eyes.
"What does this mean?"
Old man Thénardier answered respectfully,
"Monsieur, it means that I'm taking Cosette back."
Cosette shuddered and snuggled closer to the nice man. He answered, looking Thénardier straight in the eye and enunciating each syllable distinctly,
"You are taking Cosette back?"
"Yes, monsieur, I'm taking her back. I'll tell you something. I've thought about it. Actually, I don't have the right to give her to you. I'm an honest man, you see. This little girl doesn't belong to me. She belongs to her mother. It's her mother that entrusted her to me. I can only hand her over to her mother. You'll say to me, 'Her mother is dead.' Fine, in that case, I can only hand the child over to a person who can bring me a written order signed by the mother to the effect that I should hand the child to that particular party. That much is clear."
Without replying, the man fumbled in his pocket, and Thénardier watched as the wallet with the banknotes reappeared. The innkeeper felt a shiver of joy.
"Good," he thought. "Stay with it. He's about to corrupt me."